Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up later in the show, Taylor Chalstrom joins us with another interview. But we start today with a sneak peek of a session at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference.
Let's go ahead and start out with, if you would please, go ahead and give us your name and your title.
So I'm Elia Scudiero, and I'm an associate research agronomist at the University of California. I'm located at the Environmental Sciences Department. I also have a joint appointment with the USDA ARS at the U.S. National Lab for research on salinity and water scarce farmland.
And you will be speaking at the Crop Consultants Conference coming up in September. Tell us a little bit about what you're speaking on.
So I'm talking about a recent advance on computing in agriculture or agricultural data sciences, and specifically on how artificial intelligence-based tools might help consultants enhance the recommendations that are going to do in the field. So we'll describe a little bit some ongoing research here at the University of California and other institutions, especially in the U.S. Southwest, on production agriculture with a focus on water management, salinity detection control, nutrient management, and as well weed and disease detection, and especially on the use of high-resolution imagery that can come from drones or smartphones or satellite data, and how this data can be integrated with and analyzed with machine learning and advanced computing, so that basically we're going to take a look at soil, especially because that's my primary areas of expertise, and soil plant water relationships. So we are going to describe a little bit about what's available there in terms of available tools that the farmer can already get their hands on from the ag tech industry, but as well what is being developed at the university and with partnerships with the ag tech. So some of the tools that will be available in a few years, and some of the tools that are already available. And then as well I'm going to talk about some of the gaps in this field that is an emerging field, and perhaps take some input from the audience through some interactive questions and answer or pooling that is going to be done during the presentation, to get the opinions from the consultants themselves on what they would like to see and what directions they think it's AI can most help them towards.
And this is such an interesting topic when we're talking about artificial intelligence and the use in agriculture, because it seems like there are so many different uses in agriculture. Now, when we're talking about AI and soil, what are some of the ways that AI can help with improving our soil quality?
So we have a lot of data about soil that has been collected throughout the years from USDA and other institutions. We have a lot of data that companies are collecting on farmers' fields, and consultants are collecting on farmer fields. So AI can help us leverage this knowledge from all this data that is available from legacy surveys from different agencies or other entities, and together with big data that is available either from satellite or from other types of platforms, we can help make better sense and gather better and more accurate information with very high spatial variability. Because at the moment we are kind of stuck at the bottleneck that current soil maps, for example, are only accurate and at the landscape scale, say, like if you're looking for the soil type that a few neighboring fields that you're expected to see in these few neighboring fields, but we don't have a very good knowledge about what is going on at the short spatial scale, so what's the soil type at each specific spot within a field. And that type of knowledge is very important for better tailoring the water management, for example, or the nutrient management, which are requirements that the growers are going to be requested to meet more and more in the future to be eligible for grants from the NRCS, for example, the soil water and conservation grants, or for increasing the productivity and environmental sustainability of their farm operations. Better, more accurate, and with higher spatial resolution type of information, so that you can address the site-specific needs of plants across their entire farms, basically.
And isn't it interesting how much we can get site-specific when we're talking about our advances in technology? We get it down to such a small area of what exactly is going on in the soil and in the crop.
Yeah. So at the moment, people could do it as well, but at the moment, it's fairly cost prohibitive because to gather high resolution information from a farm where we don't have really other information from the past, we need to gather samples at a very high resolution or deploy a lot of sensors that are very burdensome in terms of cost for farmers. But AI and data science can allow us find relevant information from data sets from other locations and bring that type of information to a new unknown farm where only a little bit of a local surveying for a few soil sensors or some soil cores or some other type of limited local surveying will be needed to adjust models that are developed for, say, an entire state to that specific new location. So we can leverage data from other locations to get a better understanding of what's going on at the new farm as well. So the promise here is to develop these new methods that can allow having very high quality product or knowledge to at a very a much cheaper price than would otherwise needed nowadays.
All right, and then we don't want to give too much away because we want people to come to your session and listen. But what would be a couple of key points that people will get when they come to your session at the conference?
Well, we'll talk about the currently available knowledge from university and companies and tools on especially on soil mapping and detecting plant abiotic stress. So those are main two areas of focus. But also we're going to talk about what AI means and what automation means. What are the different types of automation that we might be able to see? What are the different types of AI that we might be able to see? Because when you talk about AI, most people will think about robots or whatever that or tractors that do everything by themselves, but there are a lot of different types of AI that can help, from automating the data collection to data interpretation through the internet, or simply detecting, putting a new sensor on a tractor or on a drone that can help detect new parameters that are desired from either the grower or the crop consultant. We're going to take a look at the different types of AI, different types of tools, especially for soil spatial variability and abiotic stress.
Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference. Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Welcome back. Here's your news for today. A recent meeting between American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval and a delegation of officials from Mexico included a talk about trade and a variety of other topics. Chad Smith has more on the meeting.
American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval met with Tatiana Cloutier, Mexico's Secretary of the Economy, and Esteban Moctezuma Barragan, Mexican Ambassador to the U.S. Dave Salmonson, Senior Director of Congressional Relations for the American Farm Bureau, says ag trade was a big topic of conversation.
Annually, we're over $40 billion of two-way trade. Mexico is the third largest export market for U.S. farmers and ranchers. Large import market, of course. And, of course, this is the first anniversary, just a few weeks ago, of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, tariff-free trade in agriculture between the U.S. and Mexico. We reviewed that and how important USMCA will be to the future of our trade relationship.
Salmonson says one of the key reasons AFBF wanted to meet with a delegation was to discuss challenges with trade between the U.S. and Mexico.
One of which is a decree that was put out by them last December on glyphosate. They want to phase out the use of that, restrict it in Mexico. And we're very concerned about that, given what a large market for U.S. corn Mexico is. We also got to the issue of biotechnology product approvals. Mexico has been very slow, non-existent really lately. And we certainly made the point that we need to continue a science-based approach when we're dealing with technology.
They also discussed issues between seasonal produce growers.
Well, it's an issue on both sides of the border. We have many of our growers, different parts of the country, have a real concern that product comes in overwhelming amounts and really hurts prices, hurts their domestic marketing with the short marketing window they have for various products. You're talking about blueberries and strawberries and squash and cucumbers and peppers and other products. Mexican side also has issues. Of course, they want to see marketing opportunities here in the U.S.
The two sides also discussed safety issues for agricultural producers at the southern U.S. border as a large influx of migrants continues flowing into the United States. Chad Smith, Washington.
California and the western U.S. are not the only places dealing with the devastating drought. Western Canadian farmers and ranchers are calling for emergency disaster relief as drought there continues to ravage crops and pastures across the prairie provinces. Dennis Guy has more.
Several rural municipalities have declared states of agricultural disaster, and ranchers say they are quickly running out of grass and hay to feed their cattle. The Canadian Cattlemen's Association, based in Calgary, is concerned that the lack of grass and forage will result in a major reduction in the size of the foundation cow-calf herd. Some ranchers say they will be forced to sell off large portions of their herds with no feed to get them through the fall and winter. Jeff Yorba, with the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association, is a rancher at Wood Mountain in south-central Saskatchewan, just north of the Montana border. Yorba says Saskatchewan cattlemen could see up to a third of their cow-calf herd dispersed. He said the sell-off of cows and calves has already started.
What producers are looking at right now is somewhat unprecedented. We're in a situation where we're going to have to sell a lot of cows. Seeing sale reports where there's a lot of 400 weight calves and dry cows going to town. Just at Swift Current, there's 1,700 yearlings selling this week. Very high for this time of year. That's a fall move, not a midsummer move. I fully anticipate a third at least of the cow herd disappearing this fall. There is no choice. There's no feed.
Longer-term prospects for the retained portion of the cow-calf herd is causing challenges as well. Jeff Yorba says some ranchers are beginning to think about finding places to send their retained cows for the fall and through the winter. There is nothing to feed the cattle on their home range and nowhere in the region to find feed to import.
Producers are facing a situation where there's no grass and the crops aren't growing, and so there is no chance to salvage feed. The cattle that are going to stay in the herd are going to have to be fed somewhere else this winter. Figuring out where that's going to be and what it's going to cost and how far away they're going to have to go is becoming a challenge right now.
This summer's drought follows multiple consecutive years of below normal precipitation in many parts of the prairies, so subsoil moisture levels are depleted to record lows. While there have been some isolated rainfall events, little to no rainfall in past months has left field and forage crops in poor condition across the more southerly parts of Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. The drought area has also expanded eastward into northwestern Ontario. Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
A surprise frost that struck Brazil's coffee belt last week hit farmers hard. Financial Post says industry experts fear farmers there may default on deliveries of recently harvested coffee that were sold to traders months ago at prices that are half of the current value. Temperatures dropped below the freezing level on the morning of July 20th, delivering a big blow to the heart of the coffee belt, damaging trees so much that it may harm prospects for next year's coffee crop. Late last week, industry estimates on possible losses to next year's coffee crop varied widely. Initial forecasts for a loss of 1 to 2 million bags quickly increased. One Brazilian exporter expects a cut of approximately 4.5 million bags. Initial 2022 production estimates totaled almost 70 million bags. Judy Gaines, a U.S.-based commodity analyst, says it might be too soon to speculate on the damage. That's your news for today. Taylor Childstrom is up next. We will be right back.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Hi, welcome to My Ag Life. Today we're talking with Matt Comrie, technical nutrition agronomist with Wilbur Ellis Agribusiness, about a multi-pronged irrigation approach for mitigating tree nut stress and disease. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks. I'm happy to be here and discussing irrigation management.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. Matt, tree nut stress and disease are more prominent than ever during tight water years such as this one. What can growers and crop consultants do to implement a strategic irrigation schedule for mitigating some of these issues?
Well, I will answer that this way. If I were a grower, I would be looking into the various tools that we have nowadays at our disposal to not only estimate tree water use, but to also quantify how much water to deliver at specific periods of time, and specific to nut or tree stress and disease. A couple that I can think of off the top of my head would be to look into or implement regulated deficit irrigation. And the example that comes to mind is in almonds, you know, going into hole split. One of the greatest tools that a grower has at their disposal to combat hull rot is irrigation management and the deficit thereof. So one way is to, but you can't deficit irrigate unless you have a very good understanding of one, what water demand is at that period of time, and two, how much you're actually delivering to the field. So knowing those two items are critical in any irrigation schedule. Let's talk about walnuts. Mite pressure is going to flare up, my guess, significantly in the coming weeks, because like you said, we're at a water deficit year, not you know, drought conditions are definitely starting to rear its ugly head, you know, this season. And one way to combat mite damage is through irrigation, is through keeping trees at their proper water status and maintaining turgor pressure, which does not allow for mites to feed on liquids inside of tissues. So those are two examples that I can bring up off the top of my head. But I would strongly encourage growers to look into some of these tools that we have nowadays to help make these irrigation decisions, because it fundamentally boils down to two questions, right? It's when do I turn the pump on, and how long do I run that pump to deliver the appropriate amount of water to my field or to my orchard?
I want to go back for a second and clarify something. You're talking about deficit irrigation. You bring up almonds as an example, but how does deficit irrigation fare for some of the other tree crops out there as well?
It's, you know, deficit irrigating hastens maturity. It is definitely practiced in other tree crops, most other tree crops. I can't think of one that off the top of my head that doesn't utilize or benefit from some sort of regulated, that's the important term there, is regulated deficit irrigation. One primary reason is harvest of these nut crops is particularly violent to the tree itself. And if we have not hardened or dried the trees down to a certain amount, we can bark trees, we can damage trees to such a degree that we leave ourselves susceptible to other diseases, right? Canker diseases are common in orchards or fields that have been damaged from harvest. So that's one particular reason why we would deficit irrigate. But it is very common in most crops to deficit irrigate leading up to harvest. In almonds, we do it another primary reason is to combat hull rot, which is a disease that can be particularly problematic in the harvest period for almonds.
Matt, when it comes to irrigation management, growers can take a soil, climate, or plant-based approach. What are the benefits of each of these approaches?
So I would encourage growers to look at all of these tools, all of these approaches. I would say soil-based approach, what comes to my mind is an approach called the allowed depletion method, which really what you're doing is estimating how much water the soil can hold in your orchard in the effective rooting zone. And then we're just keeping track of water usage by that orchard and then refilling at a predetermined trigger or irrigation trigger, or which is, I think, is gaining a lot of steam nowadays is telemetry equipment hooked to capacitance style probes really, it's just a cell phone out into the field that is hooked to a sensor and then transmits that information to the cloud and then down to a user's cell phone or computer, graphs that information and allows a user to observe various trends, whether that be irrigation events, drying down, and such. So the benefits of either of those, you know, the allowed depletion method is fairly antiquated. It's been, there are in my mind, better tools out there, one being the telemetry equipment. And really this shines when growers have multiple sites, multiple irrigation systems that they're using. And it really provides a snapshot of that soil profile and how wet or dry that profile is. Climate-based methods, and this is primarily ET forecasting, right? So we have decades of data regarding what evapotranspiration rates are for various orchard crops. And so really what we're doing there is using climate data to estimate water use. And when we're able to do that, now we know how much water is needed to replace or refill the profile up to field capacity. And when I say field capacity, that's really just how much water that soil can hold against the force of gravity. So that is considered, 100% refilled or a full profile. Now, the plant-based approach, this is probably gaining the most steam in recent years and the most traction. It's a favored method by UC system and various farm advisors. And really, when I say that, I'm talking about stem water potential. I'm talking about the use of a pressure chamber. And really, the pressure chamber is very good at answering the first question that I posed earlier, which is, when do I turn the pump on? How much stress is too much stress, and where is that fine line of incorporating maybe some low to moderate stress levels, and when have I gone too far? So really, it's a great trigger or a great method of determining when to irrigate or what the irrigation interval should be, whether it be 7 days, 9 days, 10 days, what should that interval look like? And then we could use another approach to help decide how much water do I apply? So in my mind, when I talk to growers about irrigation management, when I talk to growers who are interested in implementing a more scientific approach to scheduling irrigations, I encourage them to use two of those three. And I think that's probably the best rule of thumb. It's the best way to reconcile real world data or real world measurements and still allow some flexibility in terms of some nuance or still allow the user to kind of come up with their own determination of irrigation practice. But that's in general how I encourage growers to get better or better manage their irrigation schedules.
And I imagine picking two out of those three is probably going to be dependent on the grower's situation. You're seeing you know, growers picking any of those two because all operations are different, correct?
Correct. I mean, some growers have multiple crops, right? Have numerous crops where they can't necessarily be as hands-on in one specific field or one specific orchard. Maybe installing telemetry equipment at various sites while using ET forecasting is the best way to manage irrigations for that particular grower. Maybe with a grower who manages their own orchard, maybe you're a little bit smaller grower, could utilize stem water potential in a more effective way in terms of deciding when to irrigate. And maybe they decide to use ET forecasting, or maybe they are a tech junkie and they want some telemetry equipment out there because that's just kind of their thing. Then maybe they go that way. But you're right. I mean, an individual grower's operation is really going to dictate or steer that decision as far as which of the two approaches they decide to utilize.
Matt, making the most out of irrigation does require knowledge and understanding of an irrigation system's application rate. What is the best way to determine the application rate of a system and incorporate that information into an irrigation schedule?
So understanding application rate is the backbone of any irrigation schedule. I mean, if you think about it, how would a grower effectively manage irrigation without understanding how much water they're applying? It goes with everything. It goes with all of the approaches we talked about earlier. And really, there's two fundamental ways, I think, to measure application rates. You know, the first is a fairly simple way. And it's just, you know, if you have a flow meter on the main line coming out of your pump station, it's a very easy way to quickly calculate what the application rates are. And the value or the number, let me go backwards. The units that we're trying to determine are acre inches applied per acre per hour of runtime. If we can dial our application rates down to that unit of measure, we can then use ET forecasting in a very meaningful way, in a very simple way. And most flow meters these days will have on their acre inches. And now what a grower would then do is the only other needed piece of information is number of acres in that irrigation set. And then it just really becomes a function of dividing that by number of acres to determine application rate. Now, the more involved method is if a flow meter is not available, if set size changes, let's say, then there are infield measurements that can be done. And really, what you're doing there is simply using a catch can and measuring output from a specific sprinkler or emitter. You know, in the situation of drip hose, measuring what comes out of that emitter per interval of time. And then what we can do is just extrapolate out to, it's just a number of conversions or arithmetic to get to the number of acre inches applied per acre per hour. And for that, it's a little more complicated. A little more involved. You know, we'll need to know tree spacing. We'll need to know number of emitters per tree. But it's definitely doable. And if growers are interested in that, I mean, you know, reach out to Wilbur Ellis representative. We could definitely help out with that. But most of these measurements can be done by the individual grower or user.
With some of these measurements, are there maybe any online tools that you can think of that might be able to help with some of those, or is it purely kind of by hand?
You know, there's no replacement for taking the actual measurements, and I've kind of developed a spreadsheet that makes it fairly easy. To be honest, I think maybe you know, Fresno State had I think it was called Water Right, but I'm not too terribly sure, but it was very good compiling historical ET data. And I can't remember off the top of my head if they had an application rate calculator there. Definitely something to look into. But yeah, some of the infield measurements can be a little complicated. So, you know, definitely reach out to an irrigation consultant or us if there's a need there.
We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Hi, we're back talking with Matt Comrie, technical nutrition agronomist with Wilbur Ellis Agribusiness, about a multi-pronged irrigation approach for mitigating tree nut stress and disease. Matt, another critical piece of irrigation management to keep in mind is system maintenance. What are some of the steps involved in system maintenance, and why is this so important?
So this is kind of a multi-part response to this question. And I, you know, once growers or orchard managers, once the irrigation system is installed, you know, you're really left with only a couple of tools in our toolbox to help maintain the system. So if a grower has a block or a field that they are going to be planting, really the engineering of the system is going to be probably the most impactful way or tool in order to ensure proper systems maintenance. But once that system is installed, I would always encourage growers to start with a water sample. You know, water quality fluctuates from year to year. And particularly this year in drought conditions, you know, we see buildup of salinity, we see water quality, even water wells are pulling from different locations of the aquifer, different stratas that can greatly impact water quality. And water quality is what is particularly with low output or low pressure systems, that would be, you know, your double line drip, drip systems, micro sprinklers, those types of things. But really understanding the water quality piece is the most important. You know, if there is a high salt load, usually indicated by TDS or total dissolved solids on that water sample, your iron and manganese levels, which is a lot of water reports don't even have that information on there, but iron and manganese can greatly impact low pressure systems through scaling, much like bicarbonate load will. So really understanding what's in the water is very important, and getting on a regular flush program, automated flushing is very important so that we're not loading those risers, those drip hoses with sediment. And also, should it be necessary, implementing chemical flushes, annual chemical flushes may be necessary, you know, dropping pH of the water to hopefully dissolve some of those sediments and any scaling that's occurring in the emitters. Just including a regular irrigation line maintenance program, typically through a line cleaner, I think are the best ways to ensure proper functionality of the irrigation system.
Maybe some of those issues can have an effect on the overall distribution uniformity of the system. You know, what should growers shoot for in distribution uniformity, and how can that best be achieved?
So most systems are designed with a 90% distribution uniformity in mind. And I think as far as, you know, a production orchard or a production system, I think the number to shoot for is 85%. That's just kind of our personal belief. And, you know, distribution uniformity is simply how uniform that water is applied across the entire irrigation set. And there are ways to quantify what that uniformity is. There are a number of different calculations. I don't know that I'll go into specific calculations, but for the most part, it's just comparing the lower quartile of application rates through various measurements taken out in the field and dividing that by the average of all of those measurements that were taken. And this comes up with a percentage or a ratio that indicates, again, how uniform the application of water is throughout the field, and not necessarily to be confused with efficiency factor, right? When developing or using something like ETC to develop an irrigation schedule, it's not necessarily the same thing. But I mean, distribution uniformity, that greatly impacts a number of things. Fertilizer applications nowadays are primarily done with our irrigation system. So if we think about distribution uniformity, any fertilizer that we are injecting into that irrigation line is going to be impacted by how uniformly that water is applied across the entire field. So it can have a profound impact on yield, profitability, and quality, and nut quality. So it's definitely something that should be measured periodically and understood.
When you have growers coming to you talking about problems with their distribution uniformity, specifically to tree nut orchards or tree nut growers, are you seeing a kind of a common trend with that distribution uniformity? Or again, is it going to be kind of different for every grower?
You know, it's going to be different, I would say, for every grower. But there is a common, well, let me back up. There's two common threads that I'll touch on. One is a negligence of sorts to the maintenance of irrigation systems, right? I mean, it just like anything, just like your car, just like, a diesel motor, it needs to be maintained. And through like what we discussed, periodic flushing, regular flushing. And that's not only done at the pump station through back flushing, but also out in the field. Drip systems have an incredibly small emitter orifice. It does not take a lot of scaling. It does not take a lot of bicarbonate load, iron and manganese, to start to restrict the amount of water that's being applied in the field. So, line flushing out in the field. So quite literally just opening up the hose ends and letting them flush for, 20 seconds or so on a regular basis, I'd say once a month is probably appropriate, can greatly improve or greatly maintain distribution uniformity. And that second is, the incorporation of line cleaners. They're incredibly common. Typically, it's not terribly expensive. And I know some of the walnut guys would probably argue with me that anything is expensive for walnuts right now. But it's a simple, and most of them are set up with a dosing pump that is wired into the controller that flips on with the irrigation system. It's small concentrations, and it keeps the system clear, and it keeps those emitters from getting scaling or any biological, like iron-reducing bacteria, algae from forming, anything like that, that can also impact distribution uniformity. Another is topography. You know, a lot of growers are starting to reach out further outside the valley and into rolling hills, into other areas. And so that's another thing that I would make sure that growers are really vetting irrigation companies and irrigation installers, because topography has a profound impact on distribution uniformity, more so than anything else. So I would caution growers to look at and you know, vet their irrigation companies and make sure that they have a good understanding and a good handle on how to install irrigation systems if there is, you know, elevation changes that they're dealing with.
Matt, we got time for one last question here. Do you have any other tips for consultants or growers looking to improve irrigation scheduling this drought year?
You know, I don't think I can emphasize it enough. It's understanding application rates. It really is. That's what it all boils down to. If there was one message I could convey to listeners or growers, it's to understand and measure your application rates. It's not a difficult procedure. Like I said, the arithmetic can be a little complicated and maybe a little overwhelming, but I mean, the value in understanding how many acre inches per acre per hour of runtime you're applying is, I mean, I said it earlier, it's the backbone of any irrigation schedule. And not to get sucked into thinking of irrigation in terms of hours of runtime. That's another common misnomer, I think, or misconception among growers, is in conversation, growers will talk about hours of runtime, which is fairly meaningless if I'm being blunt, because application rates are all different. So a system that puts out a tenth of an acre inch per acre per hour is going to have obviously drastically different, twice the runtime as a system that puts out, you know, 5/100ths of an acre inch per acre per hour. So it takes understanding what those rates are to accurately reconcile water demand with water delivery. And that's what it's all about.
Well said, Matt. Thank you for some of those insights on a multi-pronged irrigation approach, you know, for mitigating tree nut stress and disease. A lot of important information there. And we appreciate you coming on today and talking about some of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This is Taylor with My Ag Life.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like us to talk about, send me an email, sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.